Hey, you guys. Flickers of Fear time. So we're going post-apocalyptic, post-nuclear on this installment. Ever since I talked about the British post-nuclear war movie Threads from the 1980s, which was on Shudder, I don't know if it's on there anymore, which is probably one of the most depressing films. Actually, not even probably, is absolutely one of the most depressing films I've ever seen. One of the most depressing films ever made. A couple of people in the comments recommended that I talk about this movie, When the Wind Blows, which also came out in the 1980s. So that had been on my list because I heard about it when I was researching Threads. This is actually an animated film, and it's available on Tubi if you'd like to watch it for free, at least in the United States. Not sure where it is streaming in other countries. But yeah, so this is a little bit of a different take on like a post-nuclear war type of situation. Now, I don't know, like most of you that are, around here all the time know that I actually grew up in the 1980s. I was born in 1972, so I was actually in junior high and high school during the 1980s. And I remember, as most 80s, people that had their formative years in the 80s remember, there was just this kind of palpable sense that nuclear war was probably like right around the corner. So a lot of, even a lot of kind of like pop music from the time, a lot of movies at the time, you had movies like War Games that came out in 1983, stuff like that, where the possibility of a US-Soviet nuclear war was a very, very real possibility in some schools, including ours. You do like the duck and cover shit where you like put it under your desk and stuff like that, as if that would help. But, so it was something that a lot of us grew up with it being like a real possibility. So the 80s were like a really, really weird decade if you didn't live through them. There's a lot of things I like about it, but there's a lot of things. I mean, I wouldn't go back, but there were a lot of cool things about it, like entertainment-wise. But it was kind of like a schizophrenic decade because I do kind of feel like on the one hand, we're teetering on the brink of nuclear annihilation. And then on the other hand, we have Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, and like everything was like super gold-plated and gilded and, super over-the-top glamour, that kind of stuff. So it was just like a really weird juxtaposition. Maybe those two things are kind of related in some ways, just kind of like eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow we die type of attitude. I'm not really sure, but that's a subject for another day. But anyway, so I think I mentioned when I talked about Threads, we also had in the US, we had a similar type of movie, not quite as grim as the British one, obviously, because the British are really good at doing grim. But ours was called The Day After, which came out in 1983. Kind of had an all-star cast, which the Threads one didn't, which I think made it scarier. That was actually, The Day After was actually a TV movie. And I remember everybody talking about it. 83, I think I was in fifth grade, something like that. Maybe sixth grade. I can't really remember. 83, I would have been 11. So yeah, I guess that was like fourth or fifth grade. But I remember everybody talking about it the next day, like, oh my God, we're gonna get bombed by the Russians, and it's like all this like devastation and shit like that. And it was like a big deal. So everybody like talked about it. And from what I know of the UK and people I know from the UK, they said they had absolutely the same thing happened with Threads, which is actually, like I said, a lot more realistic. And it was basically made as a warning, you know what I mean? Like, this is what it would actually be like, according to what we know. So let's not do this, okay? So so there's a bit of a lesser known entry in the whole British post-nuclear media subgenre, if you want to call it that. Now, this is an animated film, as I mentioned. This came out in 1986 called When the Wind Blows. Now, this was actually based on a 1982 graphic novel by Raymond Briggs. If that name sounds familiar, it's because he had also written the children's picture book, which came out in 1978, called The Snowman, and that was also turned into an animated film much later. I think that 82, 83, I want to say. But yeah, so that came out, and I've seen that one as well. I think David Bowie did music. David Bowie actually did the theme song for this movie as well, and this is the same animation team as The Snowman. So even though they did slightly different techniques on this one, which I'll get into in a minute, the characters are animated very, very similar. So the appearance of this movie, it's really interesting. I don't really think I've seen anything done quite in this way before. As I said, the character drawings, designs are very hand-drawn. They're very cuddly and adorable, just kind of like the characters in The Snowman, where it's just kind of like these little heads and these kind of like big chubby bodies. And like I said, it's very hand-drawn, very sketchy kind of looking. But then the backgrounds, and most of this takes place in a single cottage, so the backgrounds are like stop motion type things. So they're like actually 3D environments. So like stuff is made out of clay and like other materials, and then these animated characters kind of like move through them. So that's kind of like the main bulk of the animation. And then in between, there are these more kind of like really beautiful, sort of like more sketchy watercolory looking or colored pencil kind of looking sequences, which usually represent kind of like flashbacks or fantasies that one of the characters is having. Like there's one with like butterflies and spring and all this other kind of stuff. And they also use this similar style as a contrast, like once the nuclear annihilation starts to happen, and they use this kind of sketchy animation to show basically the destruction of Great Britain. So it's like a really interesting like juxtaposition. Now, as I said, this is a cartoon, but unlike The Snowman, which I think I remember that being a little bit depressing too, but this one, probably not for kids. And especially nowadays, because I kind of feel like kids might like it, but I don't know if they would get it. It's very adult themed in the sense that it's almost like a black comedy, which I'll get into in a little bit. I don't want to go too far in that direction, but it does have like a lot of black humor to it. But I don't know if kids nowadays that didn't grow up with this whole threat of nuclear annihilation and knowing all the stuff that we knew about back then, like what nuclear war would be like what the aftermath would be like, which all of us did know back then. I don't know if they would get a lot of it, but you know, I don't really know because, you know, I'm not a kid, so I can't really tell, but I don't know if I'd really want to show kids this. It's a little bit upsetting, you know what I mean? It's kind of like sad. But I will say, if you're like a big fan of sort of like depressing animated movies that are kind of set during wartime or talk about wartime atrocities like Grave of the Fireflies or something like that, then this will probably be right up your alley. I think Grave of the Fireflies is more depressing than this. This is depressing in a different way, which I'll get into. I'm trying to like articulate how This is more like a heartbreaking or like a tragedy type of story with like some black humor to it. But those two things like work in concert to like give it its tone. I will say that I think that what makes this story so much more affecting is that it is laser focused on just two characters. And you only see the nuclear annihilation in sort of like these sketchy other animated sequences. So a lot of the destruction is kind of, I don't want to say it's like left to the imagination because they do show some sequences of it, but it's not, you know, I kind of feel like Threads was more like we followed a handful of characters and they showed like a lot of the destruction like in real time, like real life. This one is kind of more focused on these two characters and like how they deal with the aftermath and with them like not really knowing what's going on in the wider world. And their sort of cluelessness about it is what kind of makes it sadder, at least to me. So, as I said, this starts out with kind of a weird, like, out-of-context sequence. There's just, like, some actual real news footage or, you know, of Russian tanks or whatever. And then you have the title song, which is by David Bowie. I will say, too, that I think Roger Waters did, like, a lot of music for this. You know, just that he did the score, I believe. And there were also, there was a soundtrack, and it also had some songs by, like, Hugh Cornwell from the Stranglers and, like, some other people on it. But I don't remember there being, other than the David Bowie song at the beginning and other than the Roger Waters song at the end, like over the end credits, mostly it's just like a score in between. I don't remember like a lot of kind of pop song type stuff in there, at least as far as where lyrics and stuff go. So after that sequence, then we're introduced to one of our main characters. Now the main character, this little guy, is named James Blogg, or sometimes Jim. Now we start out, he's at the library and he's reading the papers. And he's kind of like tut-tutting about, oh, international tensions and they're heightening and all this other kind of stuff. And he's getting kind of worried about it. So then, like, he takes the bus home. This is, they don't specify exactly where his house is, like where this cottage is, but it's somewhere in Sussex and it's like really, really remote. They seem to like not really have any neighbors close enough by that would come to check on them. Although it does seem like they're within like a bus ride of town because he's, you know, at the library at the beginning and takes the bus home. So he goes home, and there we meet his little wife, Hilda, who's like a little plump, you know, kind of stereotypical British housewife of that generation, I suppose. So the blogs are kind of like, they're sort of, I don't want to say elderly because they're not ancient, but they're like retired, retirement age. So I'm assuming like 60s. And they sort of are meant to represent sort of like the everyman type of typical British older couple of that generation, the ones who had lived through World War II, you know, lived through the Blitz, lived through all of that, and had this sort of like keep calm and carry on type of energy, like stiff upper lip type of, you know, we beat the Nazis, blah, blah, blah. Not in an overtly, they're not obnoxious about it, but they're just like very, well, we're the British and we will sort it all out. You know, everything will be, we'll get it all straightened out type of thing. Now, James actually is kind of worried enough about this whole, because he's been hearing about all these international tensions. So while he was at the library, he got these little booklets, you know, like, what was that called? Survive and, I can't remember what it was called. Survive and do something. Or, I don't know. I don't remember what it was. But it was an actual thing that they had that the British government put out. So he gets like a couple of little pamphlets and he takes those home and he starts talking to Hilda. He's like, you know, I've been hearing all this stuff and maybe we should like, you know, read this pamphlet and do some of the shit they say in here because who knows, like the worst could happen. Hilda is just kind of like, ah, shit, man, you know, that's never going to happen. And they're always yakking and it's like, it's, she's more worried about, she's like, I don't even read all those newspapers, all those stupid politics. It doesn't mean anything. And she just wants to read the Stars column, which I guess is like celebrity gossip or something like that. So she's just kind of, he's talking about like international politics and she's like, you want sausages or you want mashed potatoes or chips or what, you know what I mean? She's like making his lunch. But these two, I really like these two characters because as sort of like doddering and like naive as they are, you know, everybody, I kind of feel like more in the UK than in the US, but everybody kind of knew, you know, your grandparents or they knew somebody that was like this. They're actually kind of sweet characters. They're sort of like not really all that informed about things. They just have this very, very quiet little isolated life and they read the news, but it's like a lot of times like James doesn't really like understand it or is just kind of going off of like half remembered type of stuff, but he does seem to like take the shit seriously. Now they're listening to the radio while they're eating and there's a report on the radio that says there could be actually a Soviet missile strike in the UK, like, in the next 2 or 3 days. So James is like, okay, well, we better do what this booklet says, because the government always knows better, knows best, and this is what they say to do, so we're going to follow these directions to the letter. So, basically, what one of the things, and this is a real thing, because this was an actual booklet that they put out, and so they're like, well, he pries most of the doors off of the cottage, and he builds this sort of like a lean-to, like he leans him like up against the wall, like in the living room, and sort of nails them down so they don't move. So, you know, it's kind of like a lean-to type of shelter, and then like stacks up like cushions and suitcases and stuff like that, like in front of it. So to sort of shield you from a blast or something like that. So he does that. He kind of starts painting the windows white, like the glass windows, and, you know, starts filling up any bottles they can find with water and stuff like that. So he's kind of getting ready, just like the booklet says. And it's funny because Hilda doesn't like stop him, but she kind of like, she's kind of like following him around, sort of like, hey, don't get paint on those curtains, or I hope you don't mess up my wallpaper. And it's all, so she's like very, very worried about, you know, her house, like messing up her house. You know, more than she doesn't really think that, I guess she doesn't really think it's going to happen. She doesn't really take it really seriously. At that point, like James calls their son, I guess at one point you never see him. Pretty much these are the only two characters that you see through the whole movie. But they have a son who I think his name is also Jim, and he has a wife and baby, and he lives some distance away, presumably. So James calls him and says, hey, you know, they said that maybe there'll be a nuclear strike. So I gave you that pamphlet. So are you going to like do the stuff that it says? And like you can hear Jim like laughing over the phone, like, whatever, this is, you know, if they bomb London, we're all going out together. So I guess he lives in London. So yeah, so he's just like not taking it seriously at all. He's like, yeah, whatever, what are you gonna do? Well, which is probably true. I mean, because the stuff, I mean, that's kind of one of the funny things about this movie, you know, in a very grim sort of way, is that the stuff that's in this booklet, none of it, I mean, most of it probably would not help you, obviously, in the actual event of a nuclear holocaust, but I guess it was just, And this movie kind of like subtly has this theme to it, is that it was just something to like make you feel like you could do something, like you had some control over the situation, even though you obviously absolutely do not. But yeah, so I think it was just kind of like a thing to make people feel better, like they were like taking some action, even though it obviously wouldn't do any good. So during this part, yeah, this is the part that's funny. This is like the first half hour of the movie is basically James going around the house trying to do like everything that this booklet says to do, you know, making the shelter and painting the windows and all this other kind of stuff. And as I said, the humor is very evident because obviously all this stuff in this is not going to do jack shit. Like if you actually get hit by a nuclear missile, you're just going to be vaporized. And so it's like not going to matter. It's like I said, it's just like hiding under your fucking desk. But the thing that's also kind of like funny, but also like in a grim, like black humor kind of way, is that James and Hilda are still thinking about, and maybe this is why they don't really think of it as that big a deal, because they're still, they lived through World War II, so they remembered the rationing, they remembered the bombing, they remembered the blackouts, they remembered all that stuff. And so they were like, well, you know, we lived through that and we are fine. You know, it was hard, but it wasn't that bad. Like, you know, we got everything back up to normal, like after not too long. So they think this is going to be the same. They're still looking at things from a World War II perspective, not really, you know, not really twigging on to the, like, the much larger thing that, like, a nuclear war is a completely different thing. Even though James does seem to say, oh, this is a completely different, but he doesn't really seem to grasp the enormity of it, and he's a little bit, and it's kind of funny, because he seems like he wants to keep up with stuff, and he does keep up with stuff, but he remembers stuff wrong, or he keeps kind of, like, casting back to like World War II and how things were back then, because that was what he had experience of. He doesn't really know like what the fuck is going on nowadays. He doesn't really know who's running Russia. He doesn't really know, you know, it's everything is like half remembered, but he's walking around almost like I don't want to say authoritative, because like I said, he's not being obnoxious or mansplaining or anything like that, but he's acting like he kind of knows what he's talking about, and he obviously doesn't know what he's talking about at all. So it's just like a really, really sad. Yeah, so it's the kind of thing where, like I said, after World War II, it's like, yeah, shit got bombed to shit, and like they had blackouts and rationing and everything like that. But it's like, you know, after that, everybody pulled together. You know, we put our shoulders to the wheel, and we stiffened our upper lips, and we, you know, got everything back to normal. You know what I mean? We were having tea and having fucking breakfast telly and all this other kind of stuff, and everything was fine. We lived through it. So this is just going to be like that. So we just have to like wait a little while and everything will get back to normal. So the funniest part to me, this, I had to go back and like write this down, like what he said exactly, because this part like cracked me up so much. So the booklet says you need to have at least two weeks worth of food stored away, which like I said, it's obviously not going to help you. 2 weeks. Yeah, everything will be back to normal after a fucking nuclear missile strike. After 2 weeks, yeah, it'll be fine. So he's like, okay, well, we need 2 weeks worth of food, at which point Hilda is like, oh, I better leave a note for the milkman to like leave us however many pints like of milk or whatever. And I'm just like, okay. And then he's like, well, I'm gonna go down to the shops and get some bread, like 14 days worth of bread. And so he goes down there, and when he comes back, he says, oh, they were all out of bread. And then he's like, seems surprised by that, and he's like, oh, must be just panic buying, that's all it is, everybody's panic buying. He's like, but here's what I got, here's their 2 weeks rations. And this is what he says exactly. Like I said, I had to go back and write it down because I thought it was so funny. Two packets of ginger, he brings it in a tray. Two packets of ginger creams, half a jam sponge, a tin of pineapple chunks, and a tin of Christmas pud. And I was just like, thought that was so fucking funny. That's what they're going to eat for 2 weeks. It's this fucking, and it was, I love that it wasn't even a whole cake, it was like just half a cake. I don't know why that cracked me up so much, but that was just like the funniest thing. Yeah, and then they're saying stuff like, oh, I should have got peanut butter at the store because that's the booklet says to get peanut butter. And she's like, we don't even like peanut butter, like what the fuck. British people and not liking peanut butter, don't get me started on that. Peanut butter is delicious. But yeah, so the fact that these characters are so lovable, but are so, like, clueless about what an aftermath of an actual nuclear war would be like, is kind of where a lot of the film's, like, poignancy comes into play, and why it's, like, hilarious, but it's also, like, really, really sad, like, at the same time. Like, Hilda at one point says, why don't we just write a letter to, you know, BJ, whatever his name is, like, Mr. Russian, whatever his name is. Why don't we just write a letter to them and say, hey, please don't bomb us, because we're rather tired of being bombed. It's like that kind of stuff. And then he's all encouraging, like, oh, that's good, dear. I don't think the post will be running, though. The post might be late, at, like, after bombs fall. So they're just very, very, like, it's just, and I'm cracking up thinking about it, but it's also, like, really, really grim and depressing at the same time. So it's just kind of, like, the fact that they just have this childlike faith that after they get hit by a nuclear bomb, then, you know, order will be restored and everything will be fine, like, after 2 weeks or whatever. And it's just they seem to genuinely, genuinely believe that. Because, like I said, they lived through World War II, and it, you know, it took more than 2 weeks, obviously, but they got through it, you know, even though it was difficult for a long time. So, as I said, that's the first half hour of the film. But so about half hour into the movie, obviously you knew this was going to happen because it's a post-nuclear war. They are actually hit by a nuclear missile. They don't really say where it hit, you know, enough where there's like a big bright flash and shit like that. The radio actually only gives them 3 minutes warning. But both James and Hilda managed to get into James's shelter, which, fair play to him, does work in, like, shielding them from the blast. Their house is kind of all fucked up. Well, I mean, their house kind of stands, but all their windows blow out, so obviously everything is, like, fucked up inside. So then you have one of those sequences, like I was talking about earlier, where they kind of show devastation around the UK, like, just buildings being fucking blown away and, like, a train being blown and, like, going off a fucking, you know, trestle or overpass or whatever. So it's just kind of, like, you don't know where that happens, but you're just kind of led to believe that pretty much the whole entire UK has been essentially destroyed. So after that sequence, we go back to the Bloggs cottage. Now, as I said, their house is kind of fucked up inside, like the walls are still standing, but they survived without a scratch because they were behind the shelter, which, like I said, it did work. The funny thing, too, is that James, he never calls it a shelter, he never calls it a lean-to, he always calls it exactly word for word what it calls it in the book, in the pamphlet, which is inner core or refuge. So every time he says it, he always calls it the inner, we have to stay in the inner core or refuge, he says. Yeah, so he calls it that every single time, which also never failed to crack me up. Now, he says that in the book, they're like, obviously you made this shelter and you have to have like all your shit in there, like your food and water and everything like that, because you're supposed to stay in there for 2 weeks because of the fallout. Now, Hilda is just not having this because she's like, how am I supposed to go to the toilet? And, you know, he's like, well, you just go in a bucket. Or so she is like, absolutely not. I am not. She's like, she's offended by the very suggestion. So she's like, I'm getting out. It's like, we beat Hitler. We didn't beat Hitler so I could like go like shit in a bucket or whatever. She doesn't say that, but you know what I mean? You know, she's like, I'm going upstairs to the bathroom, like a normal human being. But they are in the shelter for like a day or two, I feel like. And then they kind of start getting bored and like they start, it's very, very small. So, and they're both in there and they're kind of chunky. So they're like, you know, they're all strained, like they're all their joints hurt because they're kind of crammed in there together. So after a day or two, she's like, look, I don't see any fallout. Like, and she doesn't really understand the concept of radiation or anything like that. So she's like, fuck it, I'm just going. So they both get out. She's like, I have to start tidying up, because she looks out. She's like, oh, look at the mess. And it's like, you know, my curtains and my cushions and all this other kind of stuff. So she wants to get out and start cleaning up. And so basically they're only in there for like a day or two and then they come out because, like I said, she doesn't see any fallout. So how could anything possibly be wrong? So the rest of the movie is essentially this very, very slow, grimly hilarious, but also really heartbreaking chronicle of these two lovable old people slowly dying of radiation poisoning and not knowing what it is. Every time one of them develops a symptom, like at first they're just like, oh, I'm really tired, I don't feel that good. And then Hilda starts kind of like throwing up, but everything is like written off. James is like, oh, well, you're just nervous because of the bombs, but it's like, it's all over now. You know, the bombs have passed, you know, we're still here. You know, the house is a mess, but we have insurance and we can like get it cleaned up. We can get new curtains and stuff like that. You know, and then later on, like her gums start to bleed. And he's like, oh, that's just ill-fitting dentures. That's all that is. And in the morning, or once all this, you know, blows over, you can just go down to the dentist and he'll fix you right up. It's just that kind of stuff. I mean, they actually think, you know, she says she has a headache and he's like, oh, well, I'll pop down to the chemist in the morning and get you some. Like, he really thinks that anybody's like still there. Now, they don't really seem to realize. They seem confused that there is no electricity because they're like, oh, we have to turn the TV and see what happened. They try to call their son, but they're like, obviously the phones are dead and they don't understand why that is. You know, why are all the radio stations dead? Because they have like a battery powered radio. You know, why haven't the newspaper and milk arrived? It's like, you know, obviously because of the bombs, maybe they'd be a little bit late, but they've always, you know, during World War II, we always got the milk. We always got the newspaper. You know, it was late sometimes, but, you know, so it's that. Like, they go outside in the garden and Hilda says, oh, the road looks a bit melted. And he's like, oh, well, perhaps that's why the milk is late or something. So like, that's the kind of tone they were going for. They're like completely fucking clueless about what has happened. Now, you're led to believe, because it's the focus is just on them, you don't actually know if everyone else is dead. You're led to assume that everybody else, or at least everyone else around them, is probably dead. And they just have like no idea. Because, as I said, they think everything is just going to go back to normal, like, immediately. So they sit out in the garden, even though, obviously, radiation, fallout, but they don't see it, you know. And she even says, well, what does fallout look like? And he's like, oh, I don't know, snow, I guess, except maybe grayer. Oh, well, I don't see any of that, so it must be fine. It starts to rain, and they're like, oh, yay, water. And they, like, start collecting water in bowls, and, like, they drink it. Obviously, it's, like, poison. You know, so they knew a little bit, like they knew enough to like do the shelter and everything like that, but they didn't know as much as they thought they did. And it kind of like ended up like fucking them up. So as I said, I don't know if they realize that maybe everybody else is dead, or at least everybody they knew is dead. Or it could be that maybe they do know like deep down, but they're sort of like using this misplaced optimism and denial and this sort of like cheerful, everything will be all right sort of like attitude to kind of like mask that knowledge because they don't want to deal with it. It's really hard to tell because they do really seem very, very clueless. So as I said, as far as British post-nuclear war films of that subgenre go, this one isn't as soul-crushing as Threads, which as I said is one of the most depressing films I've ever seen and one of the scariest films I've ever seen also. But it kind of has its own sort of gentler melancholy, or like just kind of this way it sort of works on you a little bit, because the story is so focused and so intimate. You can imagine this is basically like watching an animated version of what it would be like to watch your, you know, very lovable and endearing grandparents, but who are also really clueless, succumbing to radiation poisoning or like the effects of a nuclear holocaust. And it's about as cheerful as that sounds, you know. And it's just like the whole time they actually think they're gonna get out of this, and they actually think there's gonna be an after. You know, it's like, oh, well, the garden's all messed up, oh, well, after this all blows over, I'll go down to the hardware store or whatever and get some potting soil and we'll sort it all out. Everything will be okay. And they just keep saying that the whole entire time until they fucking die, like at the end. So yeah, you really kind of have to be in a mood to watch this. As I said, it's not like watching Threads in the sense that you're just like, oh my God, that was the most horrible thing I've ever seen, because it does have humor to it, but the humor actually like really highlights the horror of it like really effectively, you know what I mean? Just because these characters are so lovable, and but they're just so naive and childlike that it's just terrible like watching them, and you know what's happening to them and they don't know, so it's like really, really sad. So I mean, I wouldn't recommend this, but maybe if you want to be like a masochist, like maybe a fun double feature one night. Get yourself some Earl Grey tea and get yourself some digestive biscuits. Lay it all out on the table and watch this and Threads like as a double feature. And then try not to feel like you want to kill yourself like at the end of that. Please don't do that, seriously. That would be really, really bad. But yeah, so as I said, When the Wind Blows, it is on Tubi at the moment, at least as of this recording. And if you're in the US, for free, I'm sure it's probably streaming elsewhere. It might be easier to get in the UK, I would imagine. But yeah, if you're at all into like 80s post-nuclear war type films, then you really should check this one out because this one was actually weirdly entertaining. Because, like I said, it's grim, but it also has like sort of like a really fucked up like black humor to it, and I kind of like that. And so, yeah, if you've seen this, or if it sounds interesting to you, let me know in the comments. And that'll do it for this Flickers of Fear. I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.